And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Wonderful, long, long, long time collaborator, Amikayla Gaspin. Yay.
Thank you all so much. It's so nice to see you.
So, Oya De, Oya is like the feminine trickster, and she is wedded this night with Bodhisattva Coyote. And we say, long before there were humans, there was trickster. There was Bodhisattva Coyote, who set the whole shebang going with a sizzle of lightning. This is Oya's horsetail whip. She summons the winds of change and protecting democracy from the Dementors of Doom. That's what we're here to do tonight, yes. So Coyote sets the whole thing going with lightning, and it's this sizzle of original spark and ingenuity that moves through time, and every now and then it's inquisitioned or constrained or orthodoxed. Remember that ortho means straight, like orthodontistry means straight teeth. Mm-hmm. Orthodox is straight teaching. We like our teachings curvy. Thank you very much. So whenever it gets trapped like a coyote, it's an ingenious escapade artist, right? And it sizzles all the way from before the beginning of time, all the way through time into each one of us here now, this trickster, this escapade artist, this protector of democracy. Again, citizen trickster dedicated to everyone. So this is our rising trickster renaissance equinox, the very last waning moments of winter before the equinox tomorrow. And just as a marvelous phenomenon of this planet, tomorrow everywhere in the world the sun will rise due east. It's just amazing. And it will set due west. So we're recalibrating. Equal. Again, equality is such a great thing. So, I think we begin with St. Patrick. Some of you are new to me. Some of you have traveled a long time with me. But I love the apocryphal story of St. Patrick. March 17th sort of announces him as an equinox hero. And so he gets a bad rap for driving the snakes out of Ireland. But I love the cartoon of the snakes in the back seat going, "I feel sick. Are we there yet?" Anyway, so... But the wonderful story that is so pertinent to us now is that St. Patrick is invited to a dinner where he's given a poisoned cup of wine. So he takes the poisoned cup of wine, he lifts it up to the light, the poison rises to the top like froth on a Guinness, he blows it off, wah, he quaffs the drink, and toasts everyone who tried to poison him, causing the elders to go, "Ooh, a real initiate." So I think we should all do that with an imaginary cup in our hand. We've all been given a poisoned cup of wine, personally and collectively, in this long winter. We hold it up. The poison rises to the top. We blow it off. Wah! We quaff the drink. And we toast everyone, the Dementors, everybody who tried to poison us. So metabolizing the poison. And now for some muti. So muti, so we've metabolized poison. That's our first miracle for tonight. And keep that with us because we want to, he could have drunk it and died, which would have been a kind of Piscean martyrdom trip. He could have, thrown it down in righteousness and driven off in a hybrid huff, but no, he metabolized the poison. So keep this in our magic backpacks that we all get to take away with us tonight. And then muti, as many know, comes from South Africa. It means power and medicine. True power is that which heals. And we don't source power, we invite it. Like gatherings tonight, any act of dedication, dedicated acts of beauty, magnetize power into the world. So I have tobacco from Syria. You can take a little smidge at the end of the evening if you want to put it on your altar from when it was beautiful. And I have coyote hair from Stella Coyote, who is my companion. Exactly. And Stella Coyote, freshly harvested coyote hair. She always says, tell those humans to speed up their respect, all right? And I go, we're working on it. We're working on it. And she did say, they're putting cyanide baits as in Idaho as a coyote trap. And it killed an innocent yellow Labrador named Casey. And I'm going, there's nothing more like, injured a boy. And it's like, what are we doing, humans? What are we doing lacking our manners with cyanide bait traps? We will be throwing these into the cauldron. And, because we need to do so much work, I have a cauldron within a cauldron. There we go. Things to do. So the muti is, Stella Coyote sends her regards. She will turn 19 on March 27th. And she also wants to thank medical cannabis for helping prolong her life and beat the odds in so many ways. Because the vet gave her painkiller and she was like, no, this separates me from my spirit. And I go, wait. Rummage around in the drawer. Wait, I have some medical cannabis, and I only overdosed her twice. I'm really sorry. I go, are you sleeping, dying, or stoned? She's like, I'm really stoned. But I think we've got it okay now. So that's wonderful. She turns 19, and again, our lives that we're all considering our lives. And I go, I've lived with an actual coyote. Her father was a coyote longer than I've lived with a human. And I say that without disparagement or any, just going, huh, look at that. So we have the muti, again, the coyote hair and Syrian tobacco and other wonderful things. We say, oh, spirit of the citizen trickster, compassionate bodhisattva trickster within all of us, open the path for each one of us that we may contribute our considerable gifts to the world at this time of dire beauty while having the most serious and dedicated fun possible. Maybe so. Yay. So cooperators are standing by. Let me introduce some of them. I have the astrological chart of now. We are calling on all ancient wisdom really to come back up. All the wisdom, the pattern on the trestle board says all the power that ever was or will be is here now. That's how it opens. We say, all the wisdom that ever was or will be is here now too. It's as though the backstage gods have been convening, saying, humans, God, we're going to have to either kill them or heal them. Let's try healing them first. Let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship, to collaborative conscious kinship. Yes, there's...
You're running downstairs on what you're saying.
Let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship, and all thumping is welcome. Exactly. Available for fresh animation. So we want to consider our journey, how we got here tonight. And Jupiter says, we want you to consider the last 12 years. Jupiter's a 12-year cycle. How did we get here from 2005? Whatever Jupiter says, whatever you wanted to do 12 years ago, some people were very young, says it wasn't time then. You weren't ready. Culture wasn't yet ready. Now you're ready. Culture's receptive. So it's useful to kind of prime the pump of associative reverie, to think about our journey, and introducing the the cooperators. Remember that the vernal equinox was when George W. Bush began bombing Iraq, and on the day most sacred to life. So as I unfold the generous proffering of what's being made available to us by the Sky Earth story, it behooves us to animate the metaphors that are being provided for us, lest we leave them by default to the Dementors, because they're very cunning. We'll get into that. It is also the reuniting of all that's been falsely estranged. I like saying animism and activism. And in one of the courses I run online, Trickster Calc courses, a friend said, well, what does animate come from? Anima means soul. I go, oh, right, of course. Right, so to animate something is to honor its soul. And animism is that everything has a soul, the rock, the tree, the bird, the animal, all of it. And this model of, it's more than perfect that we humans have inflicted great rudeness and churlishness and harm on our kin, and in ways that we can't resolve by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. But only by a willingness to cooperate. We say magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything. So the rewetting of animism and activism, you know, Standing Rock, everything around the world, you know, and grumpy secular progressives are going, oh, well, Native Americans are doing it, so I guess it's cool. All right, so anyway, so there's more liberating going on. The rewetting also of science and myth. You know, we know that, I love that neuroscience came out with a study some years back saying, we've discovered that people remember things better when they're in stories. It's like cute little whippersnapper modern neuroscience. But it's true that cultures embedded their scientific knowledge of the world symbolically in myths and fairy tales. You know, and that's how they were passed down. You know, the Inanna myth, which is predominant now because Venus is about to leave the western sky. These are one of the last one or two nights where we see Venus in the west, you know, and then she will go to the underworld, get so close to the sun that we don't see her. Normally, she spends 40 days of invisibility, but she's coming right back after about a week. I can't leave you humans alone, and then she will rise as the east, in the morning as the morning star. So the Inanna myth is the Venus orbital cycle. You know, and what happened, you know, we're here to redress many things, but what happened was in the alleged Enlightenment, you know, the kind of unsupervised Mars team said, we don't need symbolic languages like astrology, myth, fairy tale, we just want the science and progress straight ahead, you know. And so what it did was it extracted knowledge from its mythological cocoon of moral compassion. That all science be employed with reverence to its effect on the whole large thing. I've recently begun, just in baby ways, to study Aikido. I've studied the philosophy for eons, and I do not presume I've had four rousing lessons. But it's so useful to us because it is all spirally, right? And I've read Morihei Ueshiba, the founder of Aikido, for a long time. The art of peace is so useful to us now. I always travel with it. You know, he says, do not stare at your enemy's eyes. He will mesmerize you. Do not stare at his weapon. He will terrify you. Create your own magnetic circle, and then you can be anywhere you like. And I go, right. And for the longest time, I go, Trickster says, no rules but guidelines. And sometimes people say, well, what do you mean? And in one of the classes, the Aikido class, they said, don't block, guide. And it's like, all right, so again, something to put in our magic backpacks. Don't block, guide it. You step out of the way, you use the aggressor's torque, you know, to take them down. You do take them down, but then they have autonomy as to whether they hurt themselves or not. Don't do that, you'll hurt yourself. So these are all useful. Again, the swooshing is useful. And from Morihei Ueshiba is this beautiful word, kodotama, which means speaking and singing the desirable world into being. It's poetry, prayer, enchanting, incantation, mythology, fairy tale, and story. So that's what we're here to do tonight. And so right now, you know, in the East, right, Jupiter, the intelligence of story and journeys and travel and migration is about to rise in the East. It is opposite Uranus, Trickster, Jupiter every 12 years, Uranus goes around every 84. Uranus is the principle of freedom, autonomy, trickster, ingenuity. And we go, ooh, so it's a wild time. I mean, it's a wild story time, we know that, but we're going to talk about how we can engage, how we can step in to take hold of the story-stirring cauldron. So Jupiter is the one planet in air right now, 5 fire, 2 earth, 1 air, 2 water. So Jupiter's stories, we've gathered to have stories to air us, to tease molecules of levity into the deepest and most forlorn parts of our psyche, going, no, here we go, little trickster pluck, there we go. Because trickster loves against all odds. And something I say all the time, but, we'll bring it afresh. As there was hidden cameras in the woods photographing coyotes following along after humans laying traps, and they would watch them, and then the coyotes would spring the traps, dig them up, turn them upside down, or spring them with a stick because they're so smart, and then just for attitudinal flourish, pee all over them, right? And so again, take that. So for ourselves, for each person, the micro and the macro, astrology, is this beautiful language. Language grants us access to the realm it describes. If we can speak of it, we can journey there. So astrology is this beautiful language of our interior psyches and its connection to the whole vast, large world. Beautiful. So in a micro and macro way, Jupiter right now is retrograde until June 9th on a full moon. Retrograde planets mean they just look like they're going backwards from the Earth's perspective. It's an illusion, but it's a true illusion to us. And the word illusion in Ludo means in the game. So a planet that's retrograde is interior. It's going on a vision quest to find itself. So Jupiter retrograde in Libra, art and beauty, story crafting. So, see if this makes sense to you, that we're rummaging around in our journals and even here tonight, people we haven't seen in a long time, and it's reconnecting. And, friends who are dead, we remember conversations with them, and we rifle through our journals and our books, and we remember everything that we've ever studied, every chapter of our life, because it's all going to be quite pertinent, going, oh, right. So, for instance, I'm about to set forth for Egypt, and I've always been in love with the Middle East in mysterious ways. And then I also had this long cultural date with Japan, and so now I'm kind of dusting it off, going, all right, not enough just to talk about Aikido, just learn that thing and learn how to fall and all those things, and swoosh. But it's like, ooh, it's coming back together, and these different chapters of our lives going, I loved that thing, or I, studied Zen then, or I had this, time as a gardener, or I had this time in, whatever. It's all pertinent. Because Jupiter says as we prime the pump of associative reverie, it's going to make complete sense as we move into the spring, because inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. So things come along and it retroactively redeems all the different chapters of our life, going, ooh, here's this thing that only I could do, each one of us, because it takes all of that. And it is the story of Fatima the spinner in the tent in the Sufi story, in which I won't delineate it. It's in my book, but the brief thing is she sets forth and she survives catastrophes when everyone else is lost. And she makes happiness, she makes do with her circumstance, and then some cataclysmic thing happens. But then finally she's washed up on the shores of China and she's like, but what she didn't know is that there was a legend that an amazing woman would appear on the shore and be able to build an amazing thing that everyone had heard about but no one had seen, called a tent. So she's brought to the emperor and she goes, of course, and then remembers each part of her journey with the pirates. She learned how to make masts with her father who drowned. She learned how to spin things with the Bedouins. She learned how to weave. And so she asks for these things. Do you have long poles? No. Remembers her time with the pirates. Do you have stout, rope? No. Remembers her time with her father weaving. Do you have canvas? No. Okay. Realizing that each apparent cataclysmic chapter of her life was the building in of some essential talent for the making of her ultimate happiness. We say, and so it is for all of us. So it's very much, who brought what to this Renaissance. You know, there's more than one of us. Everybody is needed now. It's a time when everything quickens. Everything we've ever studied wants to be teased into pertinence. You know, I mean, everything. So there's this review that's going on. And it's useful rummaging in the back of closets, finding things, old journals, you know, and, you know, I've been, you know, encouraging people to do this, and then every now and then I pull a book away and find an important note, and I go, it's true, by God, what I'm talking about seems to actually be true, you know, from 2005, some of the things too, going, wow, look at that. And, so we are cultivating, Jupiter would like to encourage us to cultivate our savvy and our liberating storycraft. Because as the razzle-dazzle bamboozling swindle becomes increasingly apparent, there's a whole lot of people who need a story. You know, and again, so we don't go, we go over here, you know, we draw from, you know, also the dog whisperer going, hey, no, over here. It's why when I was part of Pacifica's team covering the Republican convention, I had a good time. Talking across borders and playing a game, going, do you want to play a game? I love games, said the Baptist minister from Alabama, Trump supporter. And I said, well, I've got a series of quotes from Daesh, known as ISIS, and also Trump, and you tell me which is which. He's like, okay, couldn't tell. Because they're so similar. Everybody wants an initiatory story. Everybody wants to be invited. Here's what's corrupt. You know, and over here we will root out corruption and remake the world, and it's your time. Everybody wants that story, but it's, again, we have the trickster, which is authentic, and the con, which is the toxic mimic. So the toxic mimic of bamboozlement and all. So there was also a wonderful person that I will be hosting on radio soon. Forgot his name, but he had a wonderful video out going, you know, second grade, and he said, second grade lessons, nobody gets seconds till everybody has firsts, don't destroy something that you can't replace, you know, just very simple, again, all of our story craft, you know, because the more we know, the more effective, beguiling, in a good way, storytellers we are, because nobody minds being asked, did you know? You know, did you know? Unless we haven't used our harumphitude composter and we ask it with attitude. So, again, invisibly under everybody's chair is a small harumphitude composter to take away with you. It means, compost harumphitude, and then speak, right? It's like, Scorpios and Scorpio rising, part of all of us will often say, I was very polite to that person, and they flipped out. We go, no, that's not the whole story. You thought they were a dingbat, and they knew it, right? And so we're always emanating our true assessment of people, you know, and we are all directing this movie. You know, as Reverend Ike says, if we can dream it up, we can dream it down, right? There we go. But on some level, the wonderful word complicity, not shame, not blame, but whatever's going on, we're contributing our energetic chi to that. And we want to inhale, once we realize that, we want to inhale back our chi and exhale it into the desirable story. And then there was another good article that says, to tell someone they're wrong, you first want to tell them they're right. So it's again stepping into the circle, going, oh, we so appreciate your desire to be initiated and to root out corruption. Absolutely. And then you slowly back out with the magic thread, you know, to guide them to the authentic thing. Again, everybody wants an initiation. And right now, there's a beautiful pattern in the sky called Venus is in Aries, Mars's sign. Well, she's about to go to the underworld to gather woof for the next, you know, cultural renaissance. Back as the as the morning star disappears in the next day or two. It's been great seeing her blazing in the west. But Venus is in Aries, Mars's sign, and Mars is in Taurus, Venus's sign. So they're in what's called mutual reception. It's a beautiful thing. They're on good behavior. So it says, for all Mars within us all, Mars is woofiness and guyness, but it lives in everybody. You know, it's in Venus. So it says, well, Mars in Taurus, the real hero is the steward, the custodian, the wise person, the tender of animals, the raiser of children, the grower of crops, the green man. You know, and Venus in Aries says, and it's time for the Venus in everybody to be woofy. You know, It's like Buddy Terence McKenna once said, oh, women who eat like the wolves. And I said, and the men who love them. So So Venus wants to be woofy. She disappears March 22nd, reappears March 30th. Again, that's very unusual, because, again, usually she's gone. But the article said one of the first things you want to do to give someone permission to change their mind is to lower their defenses and prevent them from digging their heels into the position they've already staked out. So, again, it's, again, to be beguiling, to be story crafters, to invite to the desirable story of sane reverence, you know, to avail ourselves of the opportunity of people going, well, we've been conned, and we go, we've all been conned. You know, we might want to throw overuse of the word you into the cauldron and ladle out we. We've all been conned. It's supposed to be you. You know, because we are agents of not being snookered into polarity. I mean, it means having a strong position, but not being snookered into polarity, remembering the teachings of wonderful wise druid John Michael Greer, who said, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something, and you will only get heat. What two needs is three, which is the unifying story. We're all in this thing together. So the article says, if I immediately start to tell you all the ways in which you're wrong, there's no incentive to cooperate. So it's like, all right, story stealth. Remember, Ursula Le Guin says, we strengthen whatever we oppose. This is also an Aikido principle. No pulling, no pushing, just, you know, guiding, swoosh guiding to what wants to happen. You know, so we do love that. And onward, indivisible. Yeah, in my own cute little neighborhood of Cabin John, there are 85 people in our indivisible group, and very effective. You know, indivisible with liberty and justice for all beings. Anybody here part of their indivisible crowd? I mean, it's a wonderful thing. You know, with a new Trumpel-Stiltskin ban on cultures older and wiser than our own, allegedly going into effect March 16th. Oh, I wrote that a while ago. yay, Hawaii judge. Yay, Maryland judge. No, no. Into the cauldron, no. And I do call him Trumpel-Stiltskin because in the fairy tale, of course, Rumpelstiltskin, you know, he gets in such a peak that he stamps his foot and plunges into the underworld to be redeemed in some future Buddhist cosmology. So we do, you know, right now and this whole time around now, we're perusing old correspondence and papers and letters and journals and memories, you know, backs of bookshelves, messages from the past, you know, are hopping up and down. What?
Ouija boards,
right. Ouija boards. Well, here we are, the Ouija board of directors, really. So that's what we're here to do. Yeah, I did just buy a Ouija board because it's like we need everything. And it was great because the person I bought the Ouija board from at first, he makes it like the originals, but it arrived and it was too dark and scary. I'm like, too dark and scary. Can you make me a lighter one? He's okay. So when I went to the post office, I go, I'm sending back a Ouija board. And the cute post office guy goes, did you tell it goodbye? There we go. Very cute. So all of these things, yeah, there's a wonderful book that nobody's read all of called The Changing Light at Sandover, and it was poet James Merrill with a number of really interesting people, Maya Deren, who'd just gotten back from Haiti and made her fabulous book and film, Divine Horseman, and they used a Ouija board, but it's the best use of Ouija board ever. Whatever's going on, it's all in rhyme, and it's actually really wise and interesting beings kind of coming through, and we go, oh, well, and even just in this reflection, going old things, you know, ancient texts and also modern things, you know, wafting across TV screen was the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. When I remember when I first saw that as a little person. How many people have seen The Day the Earth Stood Still? Right? Okay, well, it really holds up. It really holds up. Again, everything from the past, you know. And The Day the Earth Stood Still is pretty great. In 1951, space being comes to America, to Washington, D.C., with a mission of peace, saying, you know, we've noticed you humans are unleashing terrible destructive force, and, you know, you can't do that. You've got neighbors. And and there's a wonderful moment where he's talking to the mad Einstein scientist played by Sam Jaffe. And Sam Jaffe says, I will organize all the wise people and scientists to listen to your speech, whereas the police are all trying to kill him and everything. And the space person, very handsome Michael Rennie, says, oh, you have faith in me. And Sam Jaffe says, no faith. Because once you believe something or you have faith in something, you stop thinking about it. but I have curiosity. And it's a fun thing to trade belief and faith, really, as an experiment with curiosity. But he arranges for the day the earth stood still, and all motors, all electricity, nothing harmful. Hospitals are still going, but it all stops. A friend that I was putting this out to goes, the day social media stood still, that would be fun. And the mad scientist says to his assistant, Hilda, going, does this trouble you? Are you frightened? And she's like, yes, it's very frightening. And he says, good, that's very good. Anyway, it's quite wonderful. But we remember, some of us remember, the crucial phrase from the day the earth stood still, Klaatu Barato Nictu, which is the crucial phrase, put it in your pocket too, because we might need to use it, that prevents the complete destruction of the world. Klaatu Barato Nictu is very important. Yes, humans have behaved badly before, but never with this incredible systematic technology of death and poison. Jupiter likes to remind us in story crafting of the five-act structure. Five-acts is intrinsic to nature. Venus forms a five-petaled, orbital design over 8 years. I use this a lot, but let me refresh it for everybody. A friend of mine says the problem with modern storytelling is that it's forgotten about the five-act structure. Four-acts is tragedy. Five-acts is comedy. Not ha-ha, but redemption, renaissance, how it could be okay. And so she says basically act one is here we are, act two is away, woo. Act three is oops, uh-oh. Act four is evil, where the blocking characters appear to be winning. We'll come right back to that. And five is redemption, the good thing. And she says the problem with a lot of storytelling is either it ends with act four, life sucks, and, it's all, And she goes, come back here and write act five. So it's for everyone to do the whole structure. And she says Hollywood will sometimes, kind of cheat and skip act four and just tack on a happy ending. But you got to go all the way down. It's compassion with sizzle. To be really informed about how terrible it is in order to be effective. So here we are in Act 4 on one level with everything, and I go, the Dementors of Doom playbill, which we want to kind of go into. I love Andy Borowitz. Satire is so great. His column today was, able-bodied senior who watches TV all day receives free government meals. We go, right. We know who he's referring to, right? I have Steve Bannon's chart here. Ah! Let me sprinkle it. There we go. Easy there. No, and also what's quirky is let us animate the desirable, lest the Dementors get the wrong thing. So he's born with Venus in Scorpio, me too, at 19 plus Scorpio, which I normally love. Medieval astrologers called it the accursed degree of the accursed sign because its image is a woman draws back two dark curtains leading to a sacred pathway. So it's meant to be a very positive thing, for us, right? But there, Bannon's got that, straight up, and it's like, oh, he is the toxic mimic guy, right? He's drawing back two dark curtains leading to, oh, no, not that pathway. And he is a Sagittarius, God. But Jane Meyer has a really excellent article in The New Yorker that just came out about these Dementors. Let me put him over here for a moment. You stay there. Right. Remember also that all ritual is literalized metaphor. Santero, a friend of mine, said if somebody's behaving badly, you write their name on a piece of paper and you put it in the freezer to cool them out. So it's like, you might be going to the freezer, Steve Bannon, just to cool out. We're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients. So we do have the lowest devolutionary, demonically possessed Dementors of Doom on stage right now. And it's true, as I've reported since August, really, I do like the model of possession. I think Trump is possessed by a cunning demonic retrovirus. But also, because it's kind of ingenious. And he did have the toxic mimic story, the multi-level marketing story. I will bring to you the greatest, but that's about to all go away. But so it's, Robert Mercer, just a little bit, I want to go into this too. In the quote, it says, Bob Mercer thinks the less government, the better. He's happy if people don't trust the government. And if the president's a bozo, he's fine with that. He wants it all to come down, right? Mm-hmm. So Bannon and everybody, they want it all to come down. Important to know that Steve Bannon made these movies, In the Face of Evil. It's about eternal conflict. War is the only answer. War is an inevitable necessity. We need national trauma. Oh, we have that. He also made a 2016 film, The Torchbearer, narrated by Duck Dynasty guy. And it's all about, you know, yay Christianity and anything, and there's going to be a huge war, and we're going to make that war happen between Christianity and Islam. And we go, whew. His point of view is that war resets the world. And we go, whoa. I love that I asked the I Ching after the devastating election. I Ching, I love Stephen Karcher's version, total I Ching. And I said, I Ching, do you have a metaphor for what's going on now? And the I Ching came right back up and it said, sometimes in bad regimes, a bad ruler would put 5 poisonous creatures in a jar and wait until one of them killed and ate the others. I'm going, well, that's a pretty good analysis. That's sort of going on. So it's Pat Caddell, formerly a Democratic pollster. I know him from way long ago, all these characters weaving. I saw Andrew Breitbart in the last moments of his life, having a complete kind of alcohol, amphetamine-fueled psychotic breakdown in front of me going, who's that crazy guy? That's Andrew Breitbart. And I go, whoa. Who hands the baton to Bannon. But it's Pat Caddell and Steve Bannon who whisper in Trump's ear, use this phrase, the press is the enemy of the people. It comes from them. You know, the alt-right, which we like calling the alt-reich. There we go. So it says that these people, you know, Bannon and Mercer, hugely wealthy, they own the presidency. They're the originator of the Clinton murdering people stories, all of that. And it's Mercer who said, we should have taken all of the Iraqi oil. So we have this puppet, right? But behind that, what's going on? Mercer supported Jeff Sessions. Mercer's against the Civil Rights Act of 1964, wants the government to shrink to the size of a pinhead. So it's not just the, you know, Grover Norquist who said, I want to shrink government down to the size of a baby and drown it. I mean, that was like, you guys. Now he wants to shrink it down, wants the government, to fall down and the president to be a bozo. So they gave millions and millions, $10 million were given to Breitbart by Mercer to, it was basically just a bunch of blogs before then. And they think of Bannon as a kind of Svengali. And then they did this research that said that attacking Obama was counterproductive, more effective to program everyone into saying how disappointed they were. Do you remember how everybody said, I'm so disappointed in Obama? That came from these guys. Right, just again to realize the con, we go, right, and he made an anti-Obama film that was inspired by Leni Riefenstahl's film, Nazi film, Triumph of the Will, to con Obama voters into being conned into disappointment. Now, there's plenty of reasons to be some other word than disappointment, because disappointment also is a sneaky word. Dis means underworld. And so when people say, I am disappointed, it means I am powerless in the underworld. It's black magic. And these guys practice black magic, you know. So again, it's no time, you know, situation's so dire we can't afford the luxury of realism. It's time for all of us to, you know, fluff up our magic, cooperate with everything selves. You know, Rebecca Mercer, the daughter of Bob Mercer, is on the board of Moving Picture Institute. They made a cartoon film of Hillary Clinton being, you know, mortally ill and then coughing herself to death at the end of the film. It's like, you guys, this is black magic. You know, we're going to kind of, they're bent on looting democracy, in that sense, kind of energetically kin to Daesh. Again, the same thing. The Republicans couldn't tell the difference between Trump and Daesh. And that's a good thing to not be able to discern, because it is the same. You know, this looting. So the gods are backstage now, eating popcorn, going, oh, my God, look at that thing, you know, awaiting invitation. It says, you know, the divinities, the spirits, the whatever, again, curiosity, willingness to entertain this possibility. You know, it says they would love to bound onto the world stage, but they must be invited. So let's invite them. And just as a little footnote also, what the article made clear is that these elite people worth billions, you know, are exploiting the public's resentment of elites. It's very sneaky. It's very woofinjaba. So anyway, so the backstage gods are going, you know, whatever. I just hosted a very fun novelist, Tony Vigoretto, whose novel is called Love and Other Pranks. And I said, well, it's kind of perfect now. It's a real trickster tale of love. And he goes, you know, love is how we win back our hearts and our autonomy. But he said it's about malignant narcissism ultimately overthrown by empowered femininity aided and abetted by an enlightened masculinity that is willing to follow her lead. We go, oh, yeah, that's great. Perfect. So I highly recommend Love and Other Pranks as a useful novel for now, good bedtime reading. So we say Bannon has his hand on the tiller of the ship, and in that novel, Love and Other Pranks, it alternates between modern, very hip California world and pirates, 18th century pirates. And it's the same characters and the same tyrant and the same trickster, wonderful lovers in different forms. But he has a ship that has been taken over by a Trump-like person, and the ship is called the Damnation. We go, oh, that's perfect. So the ship Damnation and Flaming Jane, the wonderful woman pirate, has her ship called Eleusis. And we go, ooh. So we want to take hold of the tiller, right? And part of that dynamic is, you know, some of you were at the winter solstice or things I've been doing over the winter where I engaged a friend of mine's dream is so powerfully useful. It was a dream of 20 years ago when she was at Standing Rock 20 years ago. Everything's resonating. You know, as Mark Twain says, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. Yeah, it's rhyming. So in the dream that my friend has, there's a very bad figure, an evil figure, stirring a cauldron, and bad vapors are coming out of it, you know, and moral ambiguity is filling the world. And a voice in the dream says to my friend the dreamer, you must take hold of the stirring stick and stir the cauldron in the other direction. So she, in the dream, she makes her way through tremendous resistance. You know, it's very slow motion. And then she once she touches the stick, the evil figure disappears, evanesces. Right? And then she slowly begins, and here we are doing it too, stirring the cauldron in the other direction. So that was our winter metaphor. Now, you know, it's really about taking hold of the tiller. Right? You know, the ship of state, the damnation ship of state is there. So let us take hold of the tiller and transform the ship of state damnation into the Eleusis or the Asclepion, the ancient cultural centers of intentional dreaming, healing, and theater, you know, or something wise from our bag of guiding wisdom and sane reverence. So we like that. It's known also that people's diets, there was an interesting study done on people's diets and how it constrains or expands their thinking. So to think of what people are eating and how they vote is really interesting. It's also the idea that cacophony can drive people to follow a con. Con people know this. You know, it's again from the sacred teachings of Law and Order. You know, when Bobby says, you know, cons love a crisis, it's where they do their best work, right? So for us to be, again, to aspire to be, to ask for the qualities, you know, of calm in the midst of, you know, not being snookered into polarity, you know, it's again, we draw from everything. Wonderful book, the novel, The Initiate Brother, about how to slow time down in moments of crisis so that one sees every grain of sand in the hourglass dropping through so that you can step aside from the thing, again, to be calm and collected and wise. We love that. So cacophony can drive people to follow a con, so it serves that. So again, we say if we love freedom, you know, to react to anything is not free. To cultivate an ever-expanding repertoire of responses, you know, is to ally ourselves with nature's ingenuity. So Yes. So we have the Dementors. we'll just fold him up for a moment. There you go. Possibly into the freezer. But, you know, there were times when I had a lot of interesting people in the freezer. And I would have to say at parties going, no, not that ice cube tray. But every now and then, you know, we don't know what would happen. But every now and then I go, if you're good, I'll let you out. I'll go, you know, pour the ice cubes in the Potomac River. If you're amnesty. So it is, you know, all the myths are rooting for us in so many ways. And so at the end of the Grail legend, or what passes for the Grail legend, because myths never end, they get put on pause, and we want to hit play. So at the end of the Arthurian legends, it said that King Arthur did not die. He goes to Avalon to take Pilates classes with the priestesses to await the world's call at a time of dire danger. And so it is also with the great hero, trickster redeemer of the South, High John the Conqueror, who finishes everything off with a laugh. See, the trickster redeemer, part of all of us, is interested in liberating everybody, in dedicating that our manner of relating be a dedicated, liberating blessing. We aspire, we blow it, and we aspire, we get back on, we keep trying that. So in the same way, it said that High John didn't go away. He goes to go live in High John the Conqueror route to await the world's call at a time of danger. And we go, now we want to call them back to that we can, with them, you know, and really even seeing them, you know, put our hands on the helm. Helm is the instrument by which a ship is steered. It's the rudder, position of guidance, control, you know, all of those great things. The handle or tiller in large ships, the wheel by which the runner is managed, and all of that. The rudder, the part of the helm. I love looking up words, the helm. So we do want to call them back, and I think Ami has a great way to call back positive yang,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Thank you.
Can I get a little more volume on this, brothers? This song is actually to Obatala, and Obatala is the Orisha of the clear head. And so he always wears all white. He always sits on the highest mountain. He doesn't drink. His head is clear. And so when you sing these songs to Obatala, it's to bring in the calm, bring in the kulu kulu, to bring in the positive. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes.
To bring it. You're going to sell kulu kulu right before I sing the song? Yeah.
Yeah, again, grabbing everything I've traveled with forever, but let's bring it to life fresh. Our word cool, popularized by jazz musicians in the 40s, comes from a Yoruba word, kulu kulu. And it meant completely responsible. The cool guy took care of the community. The cool drummer was just the drummer, you know, and the divine, no overplaying, no state, you know. And in Yoruba, kulu kulu means temperature as it does in English as well. And so they said to imagine our heads as cool and our hearts as warm allows us enhanced superconductivity of many ideas going on at once. And it's the opposite of road rage. So even as you hear Ami, you know, this rousing song, but let's imagine all the heat in our heads going down into our hearts. So we are cool-headed, warm-hearted is a great way to go.
And this is quite the cool song. It is not rousing at all. It is a prayer for people to just close your eyes and just listen. And envision an old man walking very slow. Baba fururu, erere oro, oba kanyenye, hele chipo, hele ifa, oba sipasa wo, eri borere, pasiba wo. Tala, ta winni winni,
Feel this as a companion, and we invite in and we syncretize all the qualities of wisdom from all the songs and all the traditions all over the world. We want everything, you know, because, you know, these are the waning moments of winter. It's the sun is in Pisces just for a little bit longer, and then it enters Aries tomorrow morning. So we're at the very last moment, the last round of Pisces. Many planets, many parts of ourselves in Aries, again, to bring old things alive in a completely accessible vernacular. You know, to feel that each one of us has a mission and a medicine and something to contribute, something that we love that wants to be brought alive in a completely original way. We love that. But so the equinox chart really kind of guides the strategy for the season. And in Washington, D.C., it'll be different according to different times, but it's 6:29 a.m. East Coast time, and then different, but it's the same pattern and the same moment, just called different times. And in Washington, D.C., well, everywhere, the Moon and Saturn are exactly conjoined the same degree. They'll be straight up overhead in Washington. And that degree in Sagittarius, its image, because each degree of the zodiac has a metaphor associated with it, is it's an ancient bridge. You go, let all bridges, you know, let all walls become bridges. You know, it's this ancient bridge. And in classical astrology, the moon represents the people. We go, the people want diversity. You know, we know many things. You know, I liked the resonance of, there was 11-9-16, 2016, when this election was like, whoa, oh my God. 11-9-1938 was Kristallnacht in Germany with a rise of Nazism, the looting. 11-9-1989 was the fall of the Berlin Wall. So what I likened it to is the inauguration January 20th was like Kristallnacht, and the women's gathering globally around the world, and here was on the 21st was again oneness and through diversity, and was really like the fall of the Berlin Wall, but even bigger. You know, and more wonderful. I love the signs in London that said migration is older than language, and we go, oh, smart Brits, that's so great. I loved all the signs here in D.C., you know, what do we want? Science-based policy. When do we want it? After peer review. It was so wonderful because 8 out of 9 people had never been to a large kind of roar before, and that was a great thing because there was no tired old, when do we want better chance, when do we want them now, it was fresh, and there was music and a cappella and witty signs and powerful atmosphere of oneness, you know, global oneness. Little 8-year-old boy, his mom said, he's so proud of this sign, he made it by himself, and it's a Venus and a Mars sign, and it says, you know, power comes from the beauty of difference. Mm. Oh, yes, young wizard, how beautiful. So we'll have the moon and Saturn overhead, you know, again, this diversity, and we can see as much horror is being imposed, incredible beautifulness is rising. You know, the rising of the women's gathering, which is not going away, the power of indivisible, the power of people showing up at airports to embrace, you know, migrants, the incredibly poignant, sad stories of just needless cruelty being inflicted by these dementors who want to cause harm and loot things. Pluto is stationing death and rebirth, but it's stationing tonight and tomorrow and for quite a while at this particular degree in Capricorn, whose image is a hidden choir is singing. Oh. So it's a beautiful call and response. And, our beloved friend Jackie, when her husband Sheena died in tragic circumstance, but he was the protege of Baba Olatunji. So all these great drummers came to his funeral, and I double checked with her. I go, this was really right? This really happened. She goes, oh yeah. There was a moment where the drumming stopped, and then everybody could hear drumming from some other place. I get goosebumps every time I say that, too. And Jackie said, no, and remember, there was chanting in a language that no one knew, right? Mm. This call and response. So a hidden choir is singing. And it's also, you know, for those of us here, there's an incredible treasure here that's not really secret, but it's not tremendously known. It's now at the Smithsonian Museum of American Art. Does anybody know James Hampton's Throne of the Third Heaven? Yeah, you do. You do. Of course you do. But if you do and you don't, it's the one place I know I wanted to be on January 20th, going where, I want to go there. Because it's alive. And just briefly, you can Google it and see, but you can go down and see only a portion of it. But it was a humble black man from South Carolina with a humble job, but he had a vision in which the Virgin Mary appeared on top of the Capitol and told him to prepare the throne of the third heaven. And so using really gum wrappers over light bulbs, trash, you know, he made this incredible thing, and very few people knew about it. There's somebody took a photo of him in front of it, so one or two people knew, but he died. And a Washington Post reporter was going to rent the garage, and they open it up, and they're like, oh, it's like some Egypto-Aztec genius. It's unbelievable. And the only words in English are fear not, and then there's a lot of words in a language that people think is similar to Gullah, you know, the kind of African language off of the South Carolina coast, but it's not quite, right? So it's just very powerful. And the hidden choir is singing. It was humming, you know, on Inauguration Day. Well, it probably hums all the time. And there was nobody there. I was meeting other people coming in from out of town, and there was no one there. It was like, whoa! And for me, it's one of the secret souls of this country. You know, it's like, whoa. And so it's alive. And it's there. You can go see it. I visit it increasingly often, and wonderfully. So the hidden choir is singing. Tonight, the image for the moon, I kid you not, you look it up in a book, Steve Eardley's Sabian Symbols, and the image for the moon is the crown and torch of the Statue of Liberty, the necessity to defend democracy from tyranny. And we go, woohoo, woohoo. And all this year, Saturn's going to go forwards and backwards over that spot. And it's like, you know, the backstage gods are like, could we make it any clearer for you humans? Could we make it any clearer? The idea also is an egregor is an autonomous psychic entity made up of and influencing thoughts of a group of people. That's just the kind of Wikipedia thing. But it's a thought form that people contribute to. And it's especially, I'm going to bring in Dionne Fortune in a moment, but she said especially if there are cultural icons, they can be brought alive. We go, yes, well, how about the Statue of Liberty? There she is, bringer of light, modeled on an Egyptian woman and Native American imagery. So the egregor is an occult concept representing a thought form or collective group mind, an autonomous psychic entity that one can feed, you know, and encourage. The city is full of templates laid down, full of Isis, goddess of nature, images. Outside the archives is a statue of Isis, the real Isis, you know, holding the waters of life and the sheaves of wheat. And the archives are built on top of a place where they used to auction slaves when the River Tiber ran there. So the city, you know, there's a great book, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, which is quite wonderful, not made up, really real, about things that were placed here awaiting animation. You know, and I think it would be a good thing to do in this city, to go around and go, yes, hello, you come alive, and yes, you come alive, it'd be really good.
Are you wanting support to resolve conflicts in your life?
Do you wish you were better at creating a peaceful and just world?
On Talk It Out Radio, Sundays from 7 to 8 p.m., we offer the skills of self-compassion,
effective communication,
and creating understanding across differences.
Come listen, call in, and practice with us.
Talk It Out.
Talk It Out.
Talk It Out Radio, Sundays, 7 to 8 p.m. on KPFA.
No, Vijay Prashad, you really should. Prashad is an Indian historian, journalist, Marxist, professor of international studies at Trinity College. He's a harsh critic of American foreign policy, of Israel, and its actions toward Palestinians. The author of 17 books, Prashad is also an advisory board member of the U.S. Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. KPFA will present a gloriously outspoken evening with Vijay Prashad on Sunday, April 30th at First Presbyterian Church in Berkeley. That's 2407 Dana, 7:30 p.m. This KPFA benefit has wheelchair access. Flashpoints, Dennis J. Bernstein will host. Get tickets at brownpapertickets.com.